I'm an alcoholic. Okay, this group wishes no negative atmosphere. Please respect this. Can we pop our phones onto silence? And no sweets or gum chewing, no texting, and no electronic cigarettes. It gives me really, really great pleasure to introduce our second speaker, rather, of the day, Alan from Thatcham, who has come along to share your experience with us. So over to you, young man.
Okay, thank you very much. Good morning, everybody. My name is Alan, and I'm an alcoholic. It's really nice to be here. And first of all, thanks to everybody who's made me welcome. Thanks for already listening to people who've were friends years ago. And thank you in particular to Thomas for picking me up from Thatcham this morning and bringing me in, which I don't like asking people to come out of their way to pick me up, but he insisted, and I'm very, very grateful for that. I can't drive, well, I'm not supposed to drive anymore. I've got what they call macular degeneration, which, strangely enough, is one of the after effects of too much drinking. They reckon that the veins at the back of the eyes ruptured, started to bleed, and therefore they've got to inject me every month with a big hypodermic needle into my eyeball, and it doesn't hurt very much, but not much, but the thing is, it's £1,000 a shot, by the way, so they told me, every injection. I asked my GP, why is it so much? He said they're greedy, the drug people, but I couldn't care less how much it costs. I leave it to them to do it. But again, a lot of things have happened physically to me since I came into AA, and you just got to live with them. And that's the one that at the moment is affecting me most. And I thought that, you know, when I first sat down and Lucy named all the people who have passed away, and great number of them rang memory bells for me, which I thought was lovely. It reminded me of when you watch the Oscars on television and they show photographs of all the film stars who've crossed over, well, passed away the past year, and I sometimes think, oh, I didn't know he or she was dead. But most of the people that Lucy mentioned, I did know, and regretfully, they've passed away. It's difficult to follow a lovely talk that Mick gave. I identified in one aspect of his talk, which was a big feature of it, was his time in the brewery, because my very first job, well, not first one, but one of my minor jobs when they kicked me out of school was working in a brewery. Well, it was a distribution depot for Truman's Brewery. And I didn't have to do much, just look after these big dray horses that they had. And they used to, huge things like elephants, and they used to drag the carts around to the local pubs. They all stopped now, I should think. But what struck me about that particular job was that the horses refused to leave the depot until they'd swallowed two or three bucketfuls of the slops, the beer slops. In other words, they were alcoholic horses. So that was my first glimpse of what boozing was all about. And then I had a job in the steelworks, Stewarts and Lloyds, cutting steel tubes. And I couldn't get a proper job because I had to do national service, which I did at the age of 18. They kicked me out of school at 16. I always remember the teacher saying to me, "We can't teach you anything else, Vaughan." And I thought, God, it must be good. But of course it wasn't that. I'd spent far too much time on the nice things in life, drinking, smoking, and playing snooker to go to school. So lower six, out. And that was the way it was. And then the army, where I spent in Germany, a lot of drinking, of course, in the army. You could get a bottle of Johnny Walker for 60, 70 p, something like that. So it was very, and the beer, the lager, of course, was very, very strong to 18-year-olds. So that was it. But coming into AA was a real eye-opener for me. And, you know, I think back, this is a sort of, as far as I'm concerned, is a kind of thank you to all the old-timers who were around when I came in. Some of them have been mentioned today. I came in on the, my first meeting was the 4th of August, 1979. That was last Monday, was my 35th anniversary of not taking one sip of alcohol, for which I'm very grateful, because it nearly killed me, nearly gave me a wet brain. And I'm so delighted to be a member. I'm grateful to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I used to be a very strong meeting attender. I can't get around so much now. And I always recall Dr. Bob in Akron being asked, why do you still go to meetings? And Bob said, there are a few reasons. He said, one is because I've got a sense of gratitude for Alcoholics Anonymous in getting me sober. Two, because I like to help the newcomer. And three, because I enjoy the meetings. In other words, he enjoyed the fellowship, which I think is a vital part of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, to be friendly with everybody and to treat people gently. That's what I found over the years, not to be aggressive. I used to be a very aggressive guy. And I remember coming into contact with a philosopher, a guy called Goethe from Germany. And his words stuck with me. He said, you can either in life be the hammer or the anvil. So he suggested I tried being the anvil. And it worked for me, and it still does for a long time, because resentments are a complete and utter waste of time. I always quote the girl in Tesco who, when I got to the checkout desk, 10 items or less, and she moaned like hell because I had 11. And I slung the basket one side. I said, keep your stuff. And I walked out and I thought, hey, Al, you're mad. You're going to go hungry. Well, she's laughing. So I learned to be the anvil instead. And it does work. It works for me anyway. And I can take it on the chin when somebody is aggressive with me or is rude with me. I used to get very upset when that happened. So that's just a small part of what happened. The beginning of AA for me was a terrific learning experience. I took to it from day one when I came out of the detox place that Mick was talking about, the Lee Clinic in Littlemore. And the words that stuck with me were very, very helpful. You know, I heard sayings such as, one that sticks in my mind is, keep the eye over the E, keep the intelligence over the emotions. So the eye being intelligence and the E emotions, and that stuck with me a lot. Another guy said, in those early days in Newbury, he said, I came to a hopeless end, but thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous, I now have endless hope. And that again was something I wrote in my my log. I was very fortunate in keeping a logbook, not from day one, but let's say after about 6 months, something like that. And I can go back all those years and see the names that have been mentioned today, the people who helped me. People like Tom G, for example, who, to my mind, was a great advocate of Alcoholics Anonymous. He was a man, he opened the Pangbourne group on the 21st of May, 1979, and it was a great success. And Tom, every Monday would go to that hospital near Pangbourne, forget the name of it now. Anyway, and bring in carloads of people to their first meeting. And yeah, a wonderful man. But so were loads of others. People have mentioned Melvin, for example, from, I think he's from Bracknell or somewhere, and he always impressed me with his rock bottom. And his rock bottom was living on a Smoky Mountain type of place, a rubbish tip. And he used to say the only friend he had in the world was a fox, who used to come and see him every night. And he was a wonderful example again of the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then somebody mentioned Walter. He lived near the Battle Hospital where there used to be a meeting. And his flat was always open to anybody that wanted to chat. And he was a great friend. And all these people were friends of mine in one way or another. And I'm grateful for that. But anyway, getting back then to, first of all, to what happened to me. As the big book says, our stories relate what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So I'll go back to what it was like. And alcohol played a big part in my life from a young age, 14, 15, something like that. And I loved the stuff. And when I came out of the army, I worked for Lyons Ice Cream. And there were a variety of jobs after that. And I got to the stage where I reached what I think was the peak, well it was the peak of my commercial career, where my title was the executive manager for sales and marketing for a German company. And I loved it. You know, I was deep into drinking, a bottle in the desk first thing in the morning. And I used to phone for joke of the day to America. I always remember doing that. I don't know why, but I did. And drink was my downfall there, because I'd get back from lunch and I'd be quite insulting to people on the phone, some of them important buyers. So the Germans didn't like that very much when they heard about it, and over they came, and they gave me half an hour to get out of the building, which I did. I was very, very resentful. I mean, I had a big car with a sunshine roof. I had a big salary at that time. Easy expense account. They even gave me a checkbook. They must be mad. And I had a big secretary. She was very nice. But unfortunately, one of them told the Germans about me, about my drinking. And I was very, very upset. So I arranged for this guy, who I thought had been responsible for getting me sacked, to be beaten up. And I had plenty of friends, drinking friends, in Newbury, Thatcham area. And one of them arranged for two Irish guys from Reading to come along and take this guy apart. But fortunately for him, I found out before the two Irishmen came over from Reading that it wasn't this chap who'd got me fired, it was the secretary who'd got me fired. But I couldn't do much about her. And I called it off. They were quite disappointed, the two Irishmen. And it wasn't even going to cost me any money. They just did it for love. But anyway, that was the end of it. And AA at that time, you know, when I came in, was very infradig. In fact, I'm only talking about what my area, Thatcham and Newbury, I don't know about Reading, but infradig. And I always remember when I was on duty of health care in AA, I went to the Newbury Hospital, the old one, before they opened this nice new one we've got, and saw the matron, and I was going to tell her all about AA, and I said, let's speak to one or two of the people who are here for drinking too much, alcoholics. And she said, we don't have alcoholics in Newbury. So that was that. And that was the type of place it was. I mean, it reminded me of the lady who lost her husband, and she met her friend after the funeral, and her friend said, well, what did your husband die of? Oh, she said, too much drink, too much alcohol. And her friend said, well, why didn't he go to Alcoholics Anonymous? And the widow said, he wasn't that bad. So, and that's what it was like. I mean, it wasn't as open and friendly as it is today. I mean, there is a meeting in Newbury Hospital, the new one now, every Sunday, around this time actually. And we're accepted, you know, the doctors don't particularly like us, in my opinion, but most of them are amenable now to talking about AA anyway. Anyway, what my private life was that when I came out of the army, I married this girl who was a childhood sweetheart. We'd known each other from the age of 16 through the church, the chapel it was then. They burnt it down, some vandals, but never mind. And we had two kids, but the money situation was such that alcohol was number one on the shopping list, and the pub was number one on the destination place. I wouldn't move to a house unless there was a pub nearby, and in this case it was the Black Horse in Thatcham, within staggering distance of home. Although I didn't worry about cops and all that. I mean, I used to drive drunk many, many times. Never concerned me. I wouldn't even look down the road to see if the cops were there. Just jump in the car and away, and hope it was there the next morning. But of course, that's before they become very, very conscious of drink driving now. And I mean, once I was stopped by the cops, and I could hardly get out of the car or get in the car. And he said, this is on the Mumbles Road in Swansea, and he said, you're not drunk, he said, you're tired, get home. I mean, today that would have meant in the clink straight away. So that's the way I was with drinking. It was my biggest friend. My favorite drink in the summer was gin and tonic. I'd go in the garden and have gin and tonic in the sun, but not done the nice way. It was done in a pint glass, and fall asleep in the sun. And in the winter, of course, whiskey, brandy. My favorite brandy was Asbach, which is a German beer. I keep talking about Germany, I don't know why, because I won't say anything just in case there's some Germans here. But it reminded me of when I was trying to quit, I saw everybody to try and get help. And I finished up in London, even tried a faith healer. I don't know why I tried a faith healer. Anyway, I saw a hypnotist, and he sent me into a trance, or so he thought. I mean, to be honest, I wasn't in a trance, but pretended to be to please him. You know, you say, raise your right arm, so I'd raise my right arm and that kind of thing. And then I went to see a psychiatrist, or he might have been a psychologist, I'm not quite sure. Now he said to me, Al, you, oh, he didn't call me Al, he called, probably called me Alan, something like that. He said, we first of all have to find out why you become dependent on alcohol. He didn't use the word alcoholic. And he said, now let's go back to your childhood. Well, he made me tell him a story, a truthful story. I was born and raised in Swansea in South Wales. And during the war, the Luftwaffe sent across 230 bombers over Swansea, because they were, we used to have the grain for the whole of the southwest of England, and they must have thought, well, get rid of that and we'll starve them. And so the bombers came over, and as it happened, I mean, we had a shelter in the garden, the Anderson shelter, which is a big hole dug in the ground. They put these sort of things around, and my parents went to the shelter and left me in bed. I think they thought, each one thought the other had taken me into the shelter. But it wasn't to be, and the bombing was tremendous. It killed, I think, 200 and something people in Swansea that night, October 41, I think it was. And the next morning when I woke up, because I slept through it all, and all around me were the craters where the bombs had destroyed these houses, and our ceiling was cracked, and that was it, really. So I told him about that, and he said, I think we've got the reason why you became dependent on alcohol. it all goes back to those days. And so I thought that was great. I said, for a long time after, I blamed bloody Hitler for my drinking. And people accepted that, you know. I know why he drinks. I know why he drinks. Poor sod, nearly got killed. But that was life at that time. So, the important part, I think, of sharing here, apart from, I think, of remembering those people that have passed away in this area, great people. And I was in a bad way with booze. And my wife that I had then, she was very ill. She had a tumor on her spinal cord. And she was reduced to a wheelchair and special treatment, nurses all the time in the house. And the doctor used to pray outside the house that I wouldn't be drinking. That's what he told my wife. Whether it was true, I don't know. Anyway, we tried everything to help her, but it was no avail. But she was so scared of my drinking, and she was scared I'd burn the house down because I used to smoke a lot in the chair and all that. And the neighbor said, no, it's okay, he only smokes cigars, he can't burn the house down with a cigar. So she believed that. But anyway, she persuaded me to go and see the GP. Please excuse me a minute, I can't. Just have one little tiny swig. I used to hate people doing this when they were speaking. But now I've got to do it. That's better. And I went to see this doctor in the Thatcham surgery, Dr. West. And before I'd even sat down, he said, you drink too much. And I couldn't understand this because I hadn't drunk that morning. 10 o'clock, something like that. But he could smell it from the night before, you know, it comes out of your pores, I think. Anyway, he said, one of my patients, he said, was helped by this place in Oxfordshire. So I went along to see for an appraisal in the Lee Clinic in Littlemore, near Oxford. And the guy, I don't know what he was, a doctor, psychologist, psychiatrist, or just a nurse, I'm not sure what, he said, after asking me loads and loads of questions, my wife was with me in her wheelchair, she was crying, I was bloody crying, I think, and she said, he said, if you don't stop drinking, you'll end up with a wet brain. Those words stuck with me to this day. I hope they always will. Because he said it could be the next drink, which was a bit frightening, which would cause a wet brain. I didn't know what a wet brain was, to be honest, but it sounded bad enough. But I found out afterwards, of course, what it really was. I went to different hospitals, St. Bernard's in Southall, is it? Somewhere like that. And I saw people in terrible state with wet brains. One of them had spoons sticking out of his ear. And another one couldn't feel the floor when he was walking, peripheral neuritis. And people having fits. And this, the same thing applied to the Lee Clinic when I got there. So, I went in, I forget how long after the first interview, and I was in a bad way. I was put in this single room next to the nurse's station, and I started seeing all kinds of things. The last thing I remember was seeing a big white goose on the bed, having his head chopped off with an axe. And I tell this every time I'm asked to share, because it's important that I remember it. I don't want that to happen to me again, to see these horrible things. And Mick mentioned Hem and Ever, and they gave me that, which made me sneeze a lot, but still. A couple of days after, a lady came in the room, and she looked great, you know, she had a nice hair, nice ladies dressing gown on and all that. And I couldn't understand why she was in that room, what was in the hospital. I didn't even knew women had trouble with booze, to be honest, at that time. Anyway, she told me about AA, and she said how wonderful it was. And I thought to myself, well, if it's that wonderful, what are you doing back in here, you know? But she helped me light my fag and got me toast and all this kind of thing. She was very, very TLC. Her name was Bunty from Maidenhead. I don't know if anybody remembers her. But she died with booze, unfortunately. But she was the lady who 12-stepped me into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I came out after a while, met a lot of lovely people in there. I can't remember many of them, but one or two I do. And I went to my very first meeting that night in Newbury on a Thursday night. And I was impressed. I didn't say anything, but I listened to people. And the chair was a guy called Cyril from Bista, who's passed away. And I always remember a guy called Tom, who was an auctioneer from Wantage, who always amazed me. On that first Christmas day of my no drinking, I went to the meeting and he was there doing the chair. You know, he'd come across from Wantage and it was snowing and everything. And he was a perfect example of me of never saying no if offered if somebody wanted you to do something in Alcoholics Anonymous. I came to Reading and met a lot of people who used to go downstairs here somewhere, I'm not quite sure of the setup. And it was lovely on a Friday night. And that's where I met Kevin Michael for the first time. He was the first person in Reading who shook my hand. And it was a lovely meeting. And at the end of the meeting, there was no tea or coffee before the meeting, but at the end of the meeting, two ladies would get up, count all the heads, and they'd come out with a tray with cups and saucers. Very, very ladylike. I used to enjoy that. And I was asked by this lady, and I found out later she was still drinking. if I would do telephone service. I said, yeah, sure. Only been in there a short while. And I used to go to the Battle Hospital and sit in a room on a Monday night, I think it was, and take all the calls, you know. It was a great experience for me that I used to enjoy doing that. And then we lost the room because one or two people used it for courting purposes. And they took the key off us. And so, but that was my experience there. And but I've always been, am I okay for time? So I'll get on, just give me a kick and answer. The one of the important things that happened to me was I joined these correspondence groups in America. One was called World Hello and another one was Loners International, because I used to travel around a lot in my job then. And another important factor was that a lady called Sandra from, I think it's Wokingham, she, on my first birthday of AA, bought me, gave me the book Alcoholics, AA Comes of Age. And I loved that book, and I saw all about Akron, and I saw about what the old-timers had done when AA was first launched. And I had this obsession to go and visit for myself, which wasn't a very clever one, really, because I didn't have any money. But I managed to get a ticket to America, I forget where. TWA it was called, Transworld Airlines. A quite cheap ticket, but somebody said it stands for try walking across. But it wasn't really all that bad. And I got a ticket in Trafalgar Square for Greyhound buses, $99, go where you like for a week. So off I went, you know, and I saw the history of AA come alive. Its Founders Day is held in I think it's the first weekend of every June. And it was a wonderful experience. There were 5,000 of us in this place. And we went to the graveyard where Bob is buried. And we saw his house, you know, which is now owned by AA as a kind of museum, I suppose. And they gave you a terrific welcome, gave me a terrific welcome. And there were 12 steps up to the front door. And over the front door was a sign, Welcome Home. And that meant a lot to me. And we went in and saw the old coffee jug that they used to use and all this kind of stuff. They gave me a piece of the veranda to come to take home, because they were renovating the whole house, the whole of Dr. Bob's house. I still got that bit of timber. And we had a service at the graveyard where he's buried. A wonderful experience. So that was that side. I made a lot of friends in America. I still got some of them today, but most of them have died now, to be honest. But what happened to me, are you going to speed me up? No. One second. 5 minutes, okay. What happened to me was meetings became hard to get to. We got kicked out of the church that we had in Thatcham, the Roman Catholic Church. I don't know why. Somebody was asking me this morning why. They had a new priest, and they kicked us out without any reason. We were good tenants, always paid up, bang on time. I mean, I tried to find out why. I wrote to the Vatican even, but never got a reply. And also the priest, the chief priest, Father Philip, he never replied either. So I don't go to many meetings, but what I had done, I'd started an online group called called Digest Circle. And I had people, only about 10 people or something like that, writing to me emails, and I'd send them out to everybody on the list. But of course, it grew, and now we've got about 90 members, I think, something like that. And it takes all my time, you know. I've spent hours doing this Digest Circle, and we sent pictures out and cartoons and all this kind of stuff, and people love it. And if I don't send it out, they're on the phone, or they send me an email, what's happened to it and all that. So that's a big share of my life. Personally, life is okay. I love it, in fact. I retired, of course. I was a taxi driver at the very end. I better not go into that. That'll take me another hour. But I love retirement. I'm lazy anyway. And I wouldn't go back to work now, even if they offered me double the what I was getting plenty of. I mean, I was sacked from that job I was telling you about, Jack the Lad, with a nice briefcase and all the rest of it. I was making more money as a taxi driver, doing half the work. I loved it. But anyway, that's beside the point. And so now life is a take it easy, Al. Get on the phone to people. Keep the digest going. I share a lot by email. And get to the odd meeting. They're very kind in Thatcham to take me to a meeting. There's a girl called Karen used to pick me up every Wednesday. But I know people get fed up if they tie down. Nobody wants to be tied down to doing a job. So I declined in the end, and now I just go when an offer like this comes along. I'm only too happy if I can get transport. And life is wonderful. Well, thank you very much for listening to me. And it's been lovely testing your tolerance. Thank you.